Output PDX, the show about business, technology, and creativity in the Bridge City. I'm Haley Platt, and today's guest is Mike Rogaway from Oregonian. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. So, Mike, you've been writing about the Silicon Forest since 1998. What are your thoughts on how business and tech companies have evolved over the past 18 years?
Well, you think about where technology was. That's almost 20 years ago now. The internet was very rudimentary. There weren't smartphones. There wasn't social networking. There weren't data centers. Well, there were, but they were usually in a building's basement, and they were fairly small.
Sure.
You know, the technology in general has changed enormously during that stretch. In the Northwest, in Oregon and Southwest Washington, back then, we were a hardware-focused economy. It goes back to our roots in Tektronics in the 1940s, making oscilloscopes, making computer printers, making digital projectors. That was our roots, and that's what we were doing, and it worked very well for Oregon, whose roots were in manufacturing anyway, forest products, things like that. It was sort of a natural fit. We went through some real hard times starting around the dot-com bust because we didn't have expertise in what was coming, software, the internet, and that continued. Things were stayed on a pretty weak trajectory from about 2000, 2001, up until... 2008, 2009, even as the Great Recession was getting underway, we started to attract independent software developers, open source software developers who wanted to live in a different place, a less expensive place. And at the time, Portland offered that. Technologists who couldn't get work at larger companies started to start their own. So we had a startup scene that we hadn't had in a decade or more. And it coalesced, and we had a handful of really successful, at least by Oregon standards, small companies, small software and internet companies. Then that started to attract larger companies that were opening outposts or buying companies, companies like eBay, Amazon, Google, Salesforce have all opened large outposts, Airbnb in Portland. And so now we're in some ways looking a little bit more like we used to. We're again an outpost economy. We haven't historically had a large number of Oregon-based companies, but we have developed large outposts for some of the best-known companies in tech.
I feel like I've just had a lesson in our history, really.
The tech historian there.
You are. And some of your recent articles have focused on new buildings and office spaces here in town. What are some of the trends that you're seeing?
Everyone's packing into downtown now. And because the market is so hot, people are getting very creative as far as what they want for their office space. People seem to still want the large open space, although there is some pushback to that now. People are saying, oh, we want a little bit more privacy. Mm-hmm. But they're building new buildings, making them look old. They're taking suburban office buildings and giving them, you know, the exposed ceiling and things like that. You know, it goes back to the dot-com era, the ping pong table, the foosball, the keg at work. That's still very common. But everyone's competing for the most attractive workspace right now. And it's because the market for talent is so tight.
Right. Well, and so in your opinion, how does the workspace reflect a business and affect things like work ethic and even the culture of an office?
Well, I think, again, going back to the dot-com era, the idea was if it's an attractive place to work, people will stay there, and they'll continue to work, and they'll be more collaborative, they'll identify more with the office, maybe retention will be better, maybe productivity will be better. You know, some of our new offices recently, like Simple, is an online banker, just moved from the Pearl District across the river to Biamsi in inner southeast Portland. You know, they've got windows everywhere, great views, a deck that looks out on the river. It's fantastic. Wacom moved from Vancouver. They're the digital pen company for graphic artists, things like that. They moved from a suburban office in Vancouver. Now their North American headquarters are in the Pearl. It's the same thing, you know, collaborative workspaces, open workspaces, a nice deck, that kind of thing.
So it's almost like it's to keep the creative juices flowing, even in the tech world, these new businesses.
Yeah, definitely. People say they want creativity out of their software developers. They want imaginative thinking. They're not just looking for mathematicians.
Sure. So that promotes that in that kind of a new, really functional, cohesive space.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to trace it back, I mean, it goes all the way back to Intel in the 1970s, the cubicle farm. You know, it got rid of the office. Mm-hmm. It still gave everyone you know, a private space was kind of the natural evolution. You see this if you go to Intel now, is they've gotten rid of the old siloed cubicle farms. The walls are coming down. Mm-hmm. There's more interaction among employees.
And then, so speaking really in terms of Portland specifically, what, in your opinion, what makes Portland a unique tech city?
You know, people talk about our collaborative nature here and that people get along better. And I'm not sure that we actually are, in terms of personality, more collaborative than others. But I think because we don't have large companies competing in the same space, everyone's kind of got their own niche. Mm-hmm. Elemental doesn't compete with Puppet, doesn't compete with Urban Airship, doesn't compete with Simple, the online banker, except for hiring people.
Sure.
There is some
sure.
overlap there. But they're not competing in the market, so we don't have some of the cutthroat stuff that you see in the Bay Area or to a lesser degree in Seattle.
And then I want to know more about you and what keeps you engaged and inspired as a writer here in Portland.
Well, I do think, you know, sometimes people can get stale if they've been around for 20 years, and perhaps sometimes I do, but I do feel like there's a sense of the story that you'd like to tell, and I try to write that in each of our articles, is, you know, give a sense of how this fits into the broader narrative. What happened before that informs this? What might this lead to after the fact? And I do think there is a narrative element to journalism and journalism over time. And I think having been here for a while, I can say, hey, look, we've gone from this to this to this, and it's opening up these possibilities going forward, good or bad.
Sure.
Good and bad.
Right. So, Mike, let's talk about how your job as a journalist has evolved over the last 18 years.
Well, it's been a pretty profound shift. You know, when I first came to the metro area, I was working for the Columbian over in Vancouver. I was covering some of the same topics, but back then it was computer hardware, it was printers, and computer chip manufacturing were the big tech industries over in Vancouver. But it was an afternoon paper at the time. We had one shot a day at it. Yes, we had websites, but the traffic was really low. You know, we still tried to channel our information through the print product primarily. So you'd wind up all day to gather the information, and then, you know, the last hour, or at the time it was an afternoon paper, you know, you'd stay late or you'd get in early and you'd write it up then, and you'd try and, you know, take your one shot at it, you know, one big shot. And then as it became clear that people are getting more and more information online, and now probably most of their information online, we try to provide it promptly, you know, instantaneously. And so we experimented with, okay, let's post a million articles a day and just have a flood of information at people. That turned out to work really poorly. People want current information, but they don't want to be overwhelmed. They want authoritative information. So we've taken a step back, and we're trying to provide some sort of middle ground where when you take a swing at it, you do it promptly, but you try and give it a broader sweep. So in some ways, we're back to the beginning. How we communicate has changed a lot. You know, so much information is funneled through Facebook now. So, you know, we're trying to funnel information that way. And what we're writing about has changed too. I wouldn't have written 20 years ago much about office spaces because nobody thought about it very much. And a lot of people back then were working in factories and in clean rooms where, you know, the technology defined how it had to work. But now you can work literally anywhere, you know, from a living room to a collaborative office or whatever. So, you know, we're talking more about the environment and the climate in which people are working.
Yeah, good point. And then lastly, what about any advice for up-and-coming writers that you would give?
Oh, if you want to get in journalism right now, it's a very difficult time. I think, you know, you build your own identity and build your own brand and build your own network and get informed and find out, you know, develop channels for obtaining information and develop channels for disseminating it. You know, you have opportunities to define yourself as an individual rather than as associated with a specific publication or organization. And you know, that's whatever niche you identify. If you're an expert there, if you have developed your network properly, then people will be interested in what you have to say.
Yeah. Mike, thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed that.
Very glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks. And that concludes this episode of Output PDX. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.